Welcome back, friends. This is Chris Johnson, and you're listening to another episode of Pause, Purpose, Possibility. This week is part two of my really delightful, rich, illuminating conversation with the one and only Parker Palmer. Many of you already know him, his work, his books, his talks, his retreats. So I won't get in the way with any more introduction. You can learn more about him on the show notes or in the brief introduction to last week's episode, part one. So I'll get out of the way and welcome you back to listen to another segment. And then there'll be one more piece of this conversation next week on part three of my conversation with Parker. So again, welcome and thanks for being here. Enjoy. One of the many gifts of the courage work that I'm gifted and privileged to be part of, that you have brought into the world and helped with others to shape, is you've already mentioned a clearness committee process and so on. And it takes shape in other ways within the courage world as well. And that is the gift of open and honest questions, and other ways of holding space, of being solitude and community with others that invite the soul, that invite true self to come to voice, to come out of hiding, and so on. When it comes to the range and power of questions that have woven themselves into your life over the years, Parker, what is a question that you've just been yearning for someone to ask you, but across all these years, no one's asked you yet? And well, consider yourself asked right now by me. And then where would you like to go with whatever comes up with that? What's your answer, if you have one, to that question that no one has yet thought to ask you?
You know, I'm tempted, Chris, to use the old teacher trick and turn it back on you.
Yeah,
and
say,
what do you think that question should be? Because I'm not altogether sure, but I will tell you an area of mystery in my life. And this is not what I talk about with a whole lot of people. I talk about it with friends, and I'll just pretend it's just us chickens here.
Yep.
Rather than anybody listening in. So I get, at age 85, I am blessed and privileged to get a lot of emails, calls, letters, handwritten and typed letters, even today, from people who are basically saying thank you, who are basically saying my life has been touched by your writing or your speaking or your teaching, and I want to tell you this, my story, and I want to express my gratitude. What's interesting to me, and I'm not quite sure I know how to, I mean, there are a couple things that interest me, and I know how to talk about one because it's a laugh line, but it's also, I think, true. Not sure how to talk about the other one. The laugh line is that I read a lot of these as the eulogies this person would, the eulogy this person would like to deliver after I'm gone. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'm reading the text of my own funeral here, or my own memorial service. And that kind of makes me smile, because that's actually a gift, you know, that's a lovely, lovely thing. But the mystery for me, Chris, is that I don't recognize myself in those statements. I truly don't. And the nearest I've been able to come to understanding why is that despite the fact that I've had normal human wrestling matches with ego and sense of self and, you know, the need to succeed and all of that stuff that drives us so heavily in our younger years, despite all of that, I've never really seen the work I do as the work I do. I've seen it as the work we do. I've seen it as work that happens between us and not simply within me, and then gets packaged and delivered to the world. When a reader writes me and says, "You saved my life with your chapter on depression in Let Your Life Speak," my response is, "I'm very grateful for your affirmation of my writing, but I did not save you. You were fully present in whatever you want to call this salvific transmission. You are the one who engaged whatever it was that I put on the page about my own story of darkness, and came to understand within that where the light was for you and what path might take you more fully into that light." So I've never, ever truly, despite, I'm not saying I've never had an ego, I have. I'm not saying I never wanted to succeed, I did. But I've never really seen the work as a transmission from me to the world. I have seen it as a communal activity, a network of interpersonal relationships where what's happening is happening within both of us and between the two of us, the space between us. I think that's why I simply do not recognize the person that people are describing when they write these generous, kind things to me, which I appreciate. But I always have this sense of I really don't know what they're talking about.
Do you wish it were otherwise?
No. No, not at all. And I know a little bit about why. Years ago, when I was relatively young in the biz, I was in my 30s, I was friends with a couple of people who made it big as writers, one of them in the realm of spirituality. And I was close to both of these people who, over the years, I saw increasingly absorbed the projections of an adoring public. When you write, when you speak, when you lead a public life in any shape or form, you catch projections. People see in you what they want to see in you. Sometimes they make you into the goat, and that doesn't mean the greatest of all time. It means the scapegoat,
Yes,
their
right.
troubles. And other times they make you into the hero. But what I saw in these people I was close to was that as they absorbed those projections, their lives got messed up. And by the time I was 40, I was really, really clear that these friendships were partly in my life as a cautionary tale to resist projections, to be able to say, "I know you think you know who I am, but you don't. What you are reading in that book or what you were hearing in that speech is a curated selection of who I am. And it's designed to put out something that's true, but something that isn't the whole truth, because the whole truth wouldn't be useful in the way I'd like my book or my talk to be useful." And so this you may remember that when I teach the poem called The Woodcarver, which comes from Thomas Merton's translation of The Way of Shuang Tzu, a Taoist teacher, perhaps definitely one of my favorite poems in the whole universe of poems. I do a whole section on the importance of resisting projections, which the woodcarver does in that story. If people come to him and say, "How did you create this magnificent piece? You must be occupied by the spirits." And he, in effect, bows his head and says, "I'm only a workman," and goes on to describe what that means to him, which is about a spiritual discipline of kind of disappearing. In order to do the work well. So I was given these friendships at an early age, as I say, as a kind of, object lesson of a road I did not want to walk down. And I think that's been very helpful over the years. I also connect this now, if I may say one more thing about this, I connect it with, at age 85, with something that Thomas Merton said, which stuck with me the moment I read it, and I probably read it 25 years ago. Here, this very famous spiritual life writer, this monk who tragically died at age 54 in an accidental electrocution when he was attending an international conference of monks in Bangkok. He says in a piece that he wrote very near the end of his life, when he had, as he had been de dealing with all of this fame and all of the projections that come with it, projections huger and heavier than any I will ever get because Thomas Merton was Thomas Merton and I'm not Thomas Merton. He said, "I wish to disappear from the world as an object of interest in order to be present in the world in hiddenness and compassion. I wish to disappear from the world as an object of interest in order to be present in the world in hiddenness and compassion." And I think over the years I've come to understand what that means, and I am therefore grateful, doubly grateful, for the lessons I got in my 30s about resisting projections that make you an object of interest in the world. I think for me the trick has been, nobody's trying to make me an object of interest. These expressions of gratitude are sincere. And I think for me the trick has been to be able to say thank you. That means a lot to me. Things worked out as they did for you, but it wasn't me doing the saving. Whatever that action was within the two of us, and especially in the space between us, where this kind of alchemy of human relationship occurs, and we grow from the encounter in ways we barely understand.
If I may, at least two things are bubbling up as I receive that from you, Parker. One is that it reminds me a bit of, is it Marshall Gann's story of self and story of us? And I'm hearing you say that those are inextricably intertwined, that who I am, who you are, is always also going to be who we are together. So that's one. And another, if I may, you've heard, I have shared this story or version of the story with you on other occasions, and it's coming up to me here again. And that is the story of in the spring of 2013, 22, sorry, 2002, 22 years ago, spring of 2002, you visited the college where I had just begun under the umbrella of the Lilly Endowments programs in the Theological Exploration of Vocation. So I was brought to Gustavus to launch and direct that program. And you were the first big program that we offered to the campus and community that year. Your visit happened to correspond with my mother's dying process. She was in a coma in my hometown hospital for 10 days or so, which meant that when you were on campus, I was not there. But partway through your visit, partway through my mom's time in the hospital in a coma, she had stabilized enough so that I was able to leave the hospital for a bit, drive back down to St. Peter about an hour and a half, take my first shower in several days, change clothes. And then before I drove back up to the hospital, I let myself come up to campus to see if I could find you, thank you for being there, and apologize for not being with you. And this was one of the times, the reason this is coming to mind and heart at the moment, Parker, is that here was a place where, yes, you were there as the Parker Palmer, the speaker, the famous author, and so on and so on. But in my encounter with you that day, you were not those things. We were surrounded by hundreds of people waiting to hear you speak, but you engaged with me. Can I make it through this without tearing up? You engaged with me as one soul to another. You put your hands on my shoulders and you looked me in the eye and you said, "We are all doing fine here. Now you go and be where you need to be. And we all will be holding you and your mother in the light." And you gave me a big hug and you sent me on my way. Maybe 30 seconds, 45 seconds tops. And there was none of the, again, the clutter of all the kinds of projections that probably were in the room of people having expectations of you and of and gratitude for your work and so on. You were just a human being being kind to another human being and helping me to give myself the permission that until then I had not been able to give myself. Truly, to actually be present with my mom and to not worry about you or the program or any of those things. So after you gave me my hug, I left the building, went to the parking lot, took my watch off, stuck it in my pocket, and didn't look at it again until a week or two later, after we had disconnected life support for my mom. That encounter. That live encounter has meant so much to me over the years. And right now, in this moment, yes, eventually there might be a few people listening in, and I hope that they're receiving it in whatever ways are going to be important to them. But I will never tire of expressing my gratitude for you about that encounter and many others that we've had over the years. And in each case, the depth and the power of them have laid primarily in the simplicity. They're, big nature and little nature. It's been in the simplicity and the genuineness and the authenticity and the truth of what needed to happen between souls in the moment. So thank you yet again for that encounter among many others. And I hope that my giving voice to that story resonates with what I'm hearing you say as this mystery that you hold in your life about who you are and who you others see you to be and how you don't recognize yourself in the things that that people say. I'm glad that you're able to acknowledge that what people do say to you is in fact genuine and gratitude and all that. So anyway,
And in
so
that
thank you.
spirit, of gratitude, thank you for the story. It touches me. Your memory of it is more vivid than mine, for I think understandable reasons. But what strikes me as I hear the story again, is that what happened between us happened between us.
Yes.
You were there as you really are. I was there as I really was. I am so incredibly grateful for every space where we can show up as who we really are. And because those are the spaces in which something important is going to happen between us, even if its importance is not measured by the normal matrix or standards of measurement. I suppose for some people, what was important in that moment was whatever was going on stage between me and the audience, or institutional impact or whatever. But what would life be like if we lost the superior importance and meaning of moments like the one you just described, live encounters, as you said, another phrase that comes from the woodcarver story. As you know, Chris, the biblical phrase, "What profiteth it a man if if it's all about professional success, it's not worth doing." What's worth doing is always on a human scale.
What you said earlier in this part of our exchange about that sometimes you experience things that people write to you as eulogies. And that brought to mind, is it David Brooks who has written about resume stories and eulogy stories? So much similar to ego stories and soul stories. But so, both sides of which have value and use in the world and so on. But, yeah, when we get glimpses of our own eulogy, so to speak, that's no small thing.
Yeah, it's kind of sweet, and it gives me a chance to lift my head up and look over the edge of the casket and say, well, it didn't quite happen that way. And let me tell you about another time. Incidentally, that's not one of my favorite hymns.
Well, as you can tell, it is just a rollicking time with Parker. Any conversation with him is sure to take you in directions that you never anticipated. And at some point along the way, you're guaranteed to crack up. One of the things I so appreciate about Parker is that he cracks himself up. He is so genuine and unassuming and down to earth and real and just funny. So I'm glad that you got to experience that in this little segment of my conversation with Parker. As I said, there's one more piece of this, another 20 minutes or so next week, which will be the last piece of my conversation with Parker. So I do hope you come back and listen to that and enjoy it. And in the meantime, I'm going to leave you, as has mostly been our practice in these episodes, with a bit of a question to take with you, maybe a practice. The question first is one that I will tie to Parker's quote from Thomas Merton, "I wish to disappear from the world as an object of interest in order to be present in the world in hiddenness and compassion." My question for you is simply, what does that look like in your own life? Either as a way for you to be, or as something that you notice in others around you. What does it look like to be present in the world in hiddenness and compassion? Really tantalizing, evocative stuff. Thanks, Parker, and thanks, Merton, Thomas Merton, for bringing us that. And then the practice I invite you to consider over the coming days and weeks is built on Parker's observation that he is just so grateful for moments where we can show up as we really are. So there's the practice, an invitation for you to do exactly that, or to notice when someone around you is doing exactly that, showing up as you really are, and practicing gratitude when you experience that, when you notice it happening, either in yourself or someone else. Again, many thanks for Parker, and huge thanks for you that you've chosen to listen to another episode of Pause, Purpose, Possibility, and that you are who you are in the world. We need you to be who you are. So thanks for that. Thanks for showing up. And we'll look forward to having you back next week. Thanks for being here.